White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 469.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man!
Hello everybody, Van here. John and I are hard at work on our next flashback game to cover for the AU Wishbone, which will be the 2006 Florida game in Jordan-Hare. We'll have that one for you here in this regular podcast feed in just a few days. But in the meantime, I thought I would present an excerpt from the newly released 2.5 hour long 8th episode of We Believed, our documentary series on the modern history of Auburn football and what it's like to be a fan during that time. This episode today is just the first season we cover in it, 2009, the year that Gene Chizik and Gus Malzahn took over the program from a departing Tommy Tuberville, and we all know where that would be leading us soon enough. To hear episode 8 of We Believed in its full 2.5 hour glory, including the 2010 national championship season, just go to www.auwishbone.com and click on the link to become a patron. Once you're a patron, you'll have access to this latest episode and to our future episodes well before the general public. So we hope you'll sit back and enjoy the 2009 season and War Eagle.
First of all, I'm very, very overwhelmed, and I'm back home. What can I say? I'm back home. I feel very blessed. My family, myself, this is a dream come true for us, and this is going to be brief, but I want to tell you this. These people of Auburn University, the Auburn family, is what I got into coaching for, and I left it with a dream one day to come back to it. And today I'm living that dream, and I want to thank you guys in War Eagle.
Amen. 2008 had come to an end, and Tommy Tuberville had had a decade at Auburn, and he had survived a palace coup after his first 5 seasons. And, you know, we really went on to have several very good seasons there. 2004, obviously, but 2005 was very good. 2006 was an 11-win season. And 2007 was very good, as we talked about in our last episode. 2008, though, things started dropping off a little bit. And part of that was that in 2007, Nick Saban had arrived at Alabama, and you had Les Miles at LSU, and so the competition was not getting any easier in the West. And so 2008, the problems we talked about in our last episode with the offensive coordinator implosion and everything, it just seemed to be getting away from Tuberville to the point that there was really no more. I don't know, how would you describe the last days of Tuberville leading up to his leaving, his departure, and the arrival of his replacement?
I mean, one of the things was it seemed like there was people that were Tuberville people more than Auburn people at one point. But with all coaches and all sports, there's a certain period of time when the fans, regardless of the sport and the coach, they've kind of grown tired of each other, you know, unless you're winning the national title every year.
That's right.
And Tuberville had some great success, but I think people were, you know, the offensive coordinator thing was an issue, and I think people saw how things were improving in other parts of the SEC and were concerned that he couldn't keep up with them.
Yeah, it was like in just one season, there was this sense that Saban was very quickly, because we beat Alabama in 2007, and, you know, Alabama struggled a good bit that year in the transition from Shula to Saban. But there was just almost this palpable sense that even though, you know, after 08, Tuberville was 1-1 against Saban, Alabama beat us so thoroughly in 08 that you just got this sense that it wasn't going to get any better. It was only going to get worse, and we needed to do something now.
A breaking news recap now from the Plains. After 10 seasons at Auburn, head football coach Tommy Tuberville has resigned. Tuberville was 85-40 in his decade with Auburn, including a 13-0 season in 2004. But Auburn went 5-7 this year and was routed by Alabama, of course, just last week, which is currently rated number one. Sports director Jeff Shear will have more tonight on WSFA 12 News at 6. Tommy Tuberville out at Auburn. He spent 10 years on the Plains, but his team went 5-7 this year. They lost to Alabama 36-0 in the Iron Bowl to close out the season. It was their worst loss to Alabama since 1972. You may remember just in 2004, Tuberville went 13-0 and won the SEC title at Auburn, but they really struggled trying to adjust to that spread offense this season. ESPN College Football Insider Joe Shad joins us now for more on this. Why did this happen?
You know, when I visited with Tommy Tuberville late in the season, he said to me, "Not everyone's going to like me. Not everyone's going to have my back." Well, it was pretty obvious that in the end, the athletic director, Jay Jacobs, who made this call, and some prominent behind-the-scenes boosters who once tried to hire Bobby Petrino, and then subsequently, you might remember, Stan, saw Auburn go undefeated after that, they got their way. They got the leverage because, as Tommy Tuberville said, he finally had that one real bad year. 5-7, lost to Alabama. Stan, they had beaten Alabama almost every year.
Right.
Year after year, they beat their biggest rival. And finally, people who wanted Tommy Tuberville gone are going to get their way because they're going to say after 10 years, they're ready for a new voice and they're ready for a new offense.
Right. Prior to this season, in the 4 years prior, he'd won 82% of his games over those 4 years. They won five of their last six bowl games. I mean, and again, the 13-0 season in 2004. Who's Auburn looking at to replace him now?
Well, obviously, this has just happened. But I learned that last night, before Tommy Tuberville was told that he was fired, that someone on the Auburn Board of Trustees reached out to Mike Leach, the Texas Tech coach, who was already interviewed at Washington. Obviously, Texas Tech would like to lock them up. Bobby Petrino, not going to happen. They already went down that road. It's in Bobby Petrino's contract that he can't go to another SEC West school. So part of the problem here, Stan, is that some of the hottest names in college football, Brian Kelly at Cincinnati, already announced he's staying put. Chris Peterson at Boise State, likely staying put. Who are you going to hire? I'm not sure.
All right. And Tommy Tuberville, he's pretty good coach, judging from his record. He probably will get another chance somewhere as well. All right, Joe, thanks a lot for stopping by. We take a look at Auburn over the last 4 years. You can see their record in the SEC declined since that unbeaten season in 2004. Tigers won't go to a bowl game for the first time since 99. Tuberville will be okay from a financial standpoint. Auburn owes him $3 million within 30 days and another $3 million within 1 year.
And I talked to some people that were surprised we waited this long, and I talked to some people that couldn't believe we wouldn't do everything to keep him. And I can, you know what? I can absolutely see both points of view there.
Yes.
So, but yeah, I think you're right. I mean, after 10 years, the sense was maybe it's just time for some new blood. But the ironic thing was the new blood turned out to be semi-old blood because so who did we talk to?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
These are the people that Auburn interviewed before they hired the coach they hired, okay?
Yes.
Ball State's Brady Hoke.
Who went on to be like the Fresno State coach or something?
No, he went on to be the Michigan coach.
Michigan, that's right. Yeah, Michigan, and then he was offensive line. Okay.
Louisiana Tech's Derek Dooley.
Oh, good Lord. Oh, good Lord. We dodged a bullet.
Buffalo's Turner Gill.
He ended up not being as great as people thought he was, I think.
That's right. TCU's Gary Patterson.
Ah, the rerun. Every opening, here comes Gary Patterson. Good Lord. And he just stays there.
Wake Forest, Jim Grobe. Okay. He's a good coach.
Yeah.
Out of this list, he's the second best coach after Patterson.
Yeah.
The next coach is Tulsa's Todd Graham.
Yeah, we know how. He went to Arizona State, right?
Uh-huh. And Georgia assistant Rodney Garner and Miami coordinator Patrick Nix.
Wow, a couple of old Auburn alums.
Mm-hmm.
We actually interviewed Patrick Nix for the head coaching job. That's amazing back then.
And then he was out as a college coordinator a year or two after that.
That's right. And out of all that, you'll remember I kept saying as all this was going on, and by the way, how did Bobby Petrino not come up again?
Well, Houston Nutt was at Ole Miss, and Bobby Petrino was at Arkansas. But Bobby Petrino had just gotten to Arkansas. He'd been there less than a calendar year, I think.
Okay.
And we supposedly we reached out to him, but he wasn't ready to leave after a short time.
If we'd waited five more minutes, he probably would have been ready, but that's funny. So instead of hiring our old offensive coordinator, we end up going up to Iowa State. Again, you'll remember, you can vouch for me here to all of our listeners. I was saying for a long time here, why not just get Gene Chizik? I like, he was a very good defensive coordinator for us. He knows Auburn. And I was like, he coached our defense to an undefeated season in 2004, then immediately went to Texas and coached their defense to an undefeated season. He had gone two seasons in a row without losing a game. And that's so right. I was like, Chizik, man, why not Gene Chizik? Do you remember me saying that?
Oh, yes. You were carrying the flag for Chizik.
I was. And so when we hired him, I was like, well, there we go. They're listening to me. Good. But what did the guy at the airport famously say?
One of the most iconic scenes in Auburn athletics history, Chizik lands at the airport in Opelika on the Auburn jet and gets off. And there's one guy at the fence yelling, "We want a winner, not a loser."
Wow. Because he'd been, 5-19 in two seasons at Iowa State? But it was at Iowa State. But there was a lot of talk that he was disorganized as a head coach, that they had a lot of sideline problems there. In other words, it wasn't just his record, although I think that's what that guy was reacting to. And that was very short-sighted, I argued. But I think that there was the talk was that he had not run the most button-down discipline program. And indeed, that would come back to haunt us later. But not really until midway through probably 2011. And so even though the Chizik era is only going to last 4 years, and this show tonight probably won't be as long as our last two or three episodes thanks to that, I would say we got our money's worth out of Chizik. You know what I mean? I wouldn't go I wouldn't change a thing. You don't take the field goal off the scoreboard on a penalty. So even though it doesn't last very long and it doesn't end very well, you don't take 2010 off the scoreboard and say, what if we could have gotten a better coach? We might have gotten a better long-term coach, but you know, Pat Dye was a better long-term coach than Gene Chizik. Tommy Tuberville was a better long-term coach than Gene Chizik. But you know what? Gene Chizik coached us, and I know it was Cam, and I know Gus, and I know all that, but you can't take away the fact that Gene Chizik coaches us, spoiler, coaches us to a national championship in just in 2 years. So,
that's right.
So, yeah, anyway. So,
and I think the big thing that sold Chizik, and people were skeptical because of the record thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the thing that sold Chizik as a candidate is he put a really good staff together.
He did. Yes. We got to talk about his staff. But I want to say first, one of my favorite things is that you never quite learned how to spell Chizik until he was our head coach.
I still can't spell it without looking.
I used to laugh and laugh because we would email each other when he was the defensive coordinator, and you'd always leave a vowel out here or there, or have an extra Z or a K or something. And I'm like, no, that's not it. It was just so funny. All right, so he brought in a great staff. I guess at the top, we got to start with the two coordinators, Gus Malzahn and Ted Roof. What were your thoughts there?
Well, I mean, Malzahn was the hot hire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was the name. Chizik getting him, you know, with Chizik being the defensive background and and expecting him to hire some defensive coaches, like getting Malzahn, who was the up and coming guy on offense that everybody wanted, that was really exciting.
I was so excited. I remembered what he had done to us at Arkansas in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And then the big offenses they had at Tulsa. So I was very excited about getting Gus as the offensive coordinator. What about Ted Roof? He come from like Georgia Tech or something?
I think so.
And
he was fine. You know, he was solid.
I feel like they called him Ted Leaky Roof. His reputation was he could put together like a good defensive front, but his secondaries were bad. And that really was the bugaboo all 4 years. I mean, even in 2010, when we had a great defensive front and our one linebacker, Josh Bynes, we still were giving up bombs, especially in the first quarter for some reason. Every game, remember?
Oh, yeah. It was not pretty.
We'd buckle down in the second half usually, but man. In fact, there were some numbers I saw. That 2010 team gave up like 4 points a game average in the fourth quarter in 2010. But I guarantee you their average in the first quarter that year was like 20 for a total of 24. You know what I mean? I mean, they were leaky roof in the first quarter. But then we also brought in the two offensive assistants.
Who are big recruiters.
Curtis Looper.
Trooper Taylor.
Trooper Taylor with the towel. Yeah. As I call Tinker Taylor Trooper Spy or something. We did a column.
That was a great column on the War Eagle Reader.
Oh man, I know it. I think I even included it in our book, Season of Our Dreams, just because I enjoyed it writing it so much and thought it would be funny. So what do you think about those two guys? I mean, they were a little over the top, but you know.
But they were big time recruiters at the time, and we needed guys who could be big time recruiters because we're going against Alabama and LSU and Georgia.
And they really did. And I mean, and they were very positive and energetic. I mean, they brought a lot of life. I feel like Tuberville staff had gotten very staid and kind of lukewarm there by the end. They were, a lot of his staff was still people that had been with him since Ole Miss, including his Knox, his recruiting, I mean, his receiver, his receivers coach, who I never particularly loved, and his running back coach, Gran, you know, and all. I just felt like they got a little staid by the end. And Looper and Taylor, say what you will about them and all their antics, they certainly got things energetic, you know, pumped up.
No, that's a good way to think about it. Like they were, they had an energy.
Yeah.
There was an injection of energy with the Chizik staff that had not been there.
Yeah, that we needed. So we had the basics of a good team really left over from 06, 07. And, you know, 08 had been bad, but there were still a lot of pieces there. And Gus was able to kind of come in, and he didn't have a great quarterback to work with that first year. But he was able to cobble together enough pieces here and there to make an offense that the 2009 offense was never a dominating offense. But it was one of those offenses that has kind of like the 93 offense, you know, one of those offenses that has like one decently good player at almost every position, if not two, and a serviceable offensive line and a quarterback that could get the job that was efficient enough. So we didn't have really any superstar, but we had, I'll talk about the quarterback situation in a minute, but we had what turned out to be several good receivers, including Terrell Zachary.
Darvin Adams.
Yeah. And I mean, Zachary was like the more of a deep threat or breakaway threat. Darvin Adams was a great possession receiver. And so those guys were two really solid receivers with different skill sets. And then we had, at quarterback, we had had Cody Burns battling with Cox for a couple of years, and it had turned into kind of a divide the locker room situation in 08, right? With all the other problems we had in 08, the last thing we needed was a locker room quarterback controversy, especially one that has racial overtones, you know, a black guy and a white guy. And that just is the worst formula you can get for an offensive football team. And so what did Cody do in 09 as the quarterback decision was made that really impressed the Auburn fan base and the team?
Well, he said he would move to another position and do whatever he could to help the team in that way. And that kind of paved the way for Chris Todd to be the starting quarterback, and Burns moved to receiver.
Where he was good.
And played as a slot receiver, made a lot of plays, was very selfless out there, gave himself up blocking a lot. And that move kind of set the tone for this team to be an unselfish team, because if he could do that, then nobody else could say, well, I want my touches, or I'm worried about my playing time at this position or whatever.
That's right. Yeah, and he kind of basically, they had a team meeting, and he got up in front of everybody, and he was always kind of he was never a big loud leader, you know. He was more of a kind of a keep to himself guy, a very studious kid. But he got up there in front of everybody and said, I want everybody to follow Chris Todd. He's our leader now, and I'm okay with that. And that was really impressive. And everybody just embraced Cody Burns and his humility and his not selfishness. And that was really impressive. And yeah, you know, it's funny because how many times when somebody changes position like that, especially from quarterback, you never see him again, right? They just drop off the face of the earth. And he made a solid impact as a blocking receiver. He even got to catch a touchdown pass the national championship game, which I was so happy for him.
Yeah.
And he even got to play a good bit of Wildcat quarterback in 9 and 10.
Yep.
So it worked out pretty well. And then Chris Todd turned out pretty well. He wasn't the greatest thing ever back there, but he ended up setting some passing records or single season, you know, passing yards. He did really well with lots of pieces around him, including Mario Fannin. And then the other running back we got to talk about, This was the senior year for Ben Tate. Tate had come to Auburn from, I believe, Maryland, from the state of Maryland high school. Let's see, I guess he was a freshman in six, and he had played pretty well, but he hadn't had a 1,000-yard season, I don't think. And I remember that Curtis Looper, one of the first things Curtis Looper said as running back coach is, we're going to get 1,000 yards for Ben Tate this year. And he did. And that was the first year of our 9-year streak of 1,000-yard rushing years was Ben Tate. And my favorite thing we used to say about Ben Tate is he's hard to compare to any other Auburn running back because he had a good bit of speed, though not elite speed. But he had, you know, for a big power back, he had a good bit of speed. It was pretty shifty. And he could run you over. I mean, I guess in some ways he was kind of similar to a Ronnie Brown or Steven Davis, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And he would run you over. And people would say, you've been tated. I love that. You've been tated. So we had the pieces. We just didn't know if we could put them together. The defense had its moments, but I got to run really quickly through the we're not going to go through very many of the games from this year, but I got to run really quickly through the scores our defense gave up. You know, think about Auburn defense many years, you know, single digit, zero, that kind of thing. Here's what our defense gave up in 2009. 13, 24, 30, 30, 22, 44, 21, 31, 20, 31, 31, 26, 35.
Yeah, it hurts me.
I know. That doesn't sound like an Auburn defense, and certainly not a defense of a team that had a winning season and went to a bowl game and won. But a lot of those numbers I just gave you were the scores of the loser, and we scored more. Because here's our offensive scores, okay, in the first year under Gus, with just some bits and pieces out there of what we would eventually have. Here's our offensive scores that year. 37, 49, 41, 54, 26, 23, 14, 10. That was in our little dip. And then 33, 63, 24, 21, 38. So this was not what you call a defensive year on either side of the ball for Auburn. This was a year you must have been suffering as a defensive football fan.
It was tough as a defensive football fan, but you're right. There was a huge injection of life into the offense that had not been there. The offense had gotten very stale under Tuberville, mm-hmm. and they tried to go to the spread, but it didn't work. And this was the spread unleashed, and it was exciting and fun.
It was fun. I mean, yeah, we lost five games. We lost three in the middle of the year and then two toward the end against Georgia and Alabama, of course. But, I mean, in all the other games, and even in some of those against Alabama and Georgia for sure, the offense just, they looked like, you know, this was the opposite of like the old wishbone. This was the opposite of the option, the grind it out. This was an offense that did crazy things, that would go for two randomly, that would do onside kicks randomly.
It was an offense that was well-conceived, it was smart, mm-hmm. that could keep the defense off balance, mm-hmm. move guys around, and then take advantage of the defense, and even when it seemed like it was doing simple things, could get big, exciting plays out of it. And the speed sweep, the running game that he put in, Todd passing the ball to those receivers, like the offense just had a life and an explosion with Gus's offense that it hadn't had in a long time. It was really, really fun.
And I think because our offense was made up of so many pieces that were all different, he used them all in different ways, like McCaleb out of the backfield or catching a little flare pass would be amazing. And then Tate smashing up the middle for the changeup, you know. So you had a big power back, and then you had a little speed back, and it was a total changeup. You had those great receivers and tight end. Yeah, there were just so many weapons that were all different. So I know that when we played Tennessee that year, after it was over, Tennessee's coach, Lane Kiffin, said, well, they do so many different things, it's crazy. You know, his quote was like he was just blown away by all the things we did on offense that his dad couldn't figure out how to stop as their defensive coordinators. So the offense looked really good the first few games. But after the first five, it kind of dropped off a little bit. But we've got to talk about a couple of games really quickly. The West Virginia game was the rain game, 41-30.
Right now, it feels a little bit more like Woodstock than it does a football game. It is a torrential downpour, and we are officially in a weather delay, and it has been raining like crazy.
I won't know. Have you ever seen rain?
have asked the fans to go underneath the seats here in the concourse area. Most of them have obliged. The student section, however, they have come with their game face on. They ain't budging one inch. Coach Gene Chizik leading the team out of the tunnel and leading the fans in a chair. And I tell you what, this place is going to be something else tonight. Second down and 10. Brown takes the snap. Here comes the blitz. They'll just float it underneath. Pass is tipped, intercepted. Stevens to the 10, to the 5. He's in. Touchdown, Tigers. Touchdown,
four.
Tigers.
Four turnovers.
How
four
about it?
Turnovers.
20 to 30.
That
Craig
may do
Stevens.
It,
Craig Stevens with the touchdown off the interception. Holy cow! Smith in the shotgun, drops back, steps up, underneath, intercepted at the 35-yard line by Josh Bynes, and he'll slide down at the 40. You can put this one in the books, wrap it up in orange and blue. The Tigers 41, West Virginia 30. And let's say this, after an hour delay, this crowd came right back. And let me tell you, they played their part tonight.
First of all, I'd like to say that I wish I had 87,000 game balls, because our fans were a huge reason we won that game, and I want them to know that. I know that we had thousands of students that stayed here through that whole thing. Everybody came early, and nobody left because of the weather, and I promise you that was one of the huge reasons we won the game.
As Auburn wins 41-30 to improve to 3-0 on the season.
You know, this was a game that went back and forth. I mean, a lot of these games were just back and forth tennis matches. This was the exact opposite of the old 3-2 Tuberville Mississippi State game. So what are your memories of that West Virginia rain game?
Well, that was the game that was delayed because the rain and the storms were so bad. But a lot of the Auburn fans and the students stayed in the stadium and sang in the rain for a long time and enjoyed it. And it was I think it was inspiring. It was. They had a great time, and I think despite the weather, the stadium had a lot of life in it when the teams came back out. And Auburn really, I think, fed on that.
Yeah, this was again, the defense gave up 30 points, but it was a defense that was opportunistic. They caused turnovers. They could get pressure on that big, heavy, powerful West Virginia quarterback. They got interceptions and fumbles. The offense just ran crazy plays all over the field in the rain, and it was an amazing game. We pulled it out 41-30 when it was in doubt until late. You know, this was a game that went back and forth and back and forth. Similar at Tennessee, 26-22. We go up to Arkansas, though, and they just exposed with Petrino, just exposed all of our weaknesses and beat the snot out of us 44-23. And then Kentucky, we have Kentucky come in and beat us for the first time since the 1960s, 21-14. I believe we led 14-7 at the halftime, but Kentucky's running backs wore down our defense in the second half. And when we can't get anything going on offense, and our defense is getting worn down this year, it's not good. And so we lose to Kentucky, and then turn around and go down to LSU, and of course LSU blows us away 31-10. So we had been 5-0, and we're suddenly 5-3. And so I always felt like the pivotal game of this season was October 31st with Ole Miss in Jordan-Hare. I mean, if we had lost to Ole Miss that day, we'd have been 5-4 with Georgia and Alabama coming up soon, and that would have been bad. And so I felt like when we beat Ole Miss to go 6-3, that meant we were pretty much going to go to a bowl game. And it was no longer imperative that we find a way to upset those two big arch enemies at the end of the season. And we did. We pulled out a 33-20 win over Ole Miss. We beat Furman. We go to Georgia. And this is one of the more frustrating games. I'd almost forgotten this game. I went back and like watched some highlights and read the box score and everything in the game summary of this game. Do you have much memory of the 2009 at Georgia game?
I have a ton of memories of the Alabama game, but I do not have a lot of memories of the 2009 Georgia game.
Exactly. Well, see, this was I looked at it and I was trying to figure out why. Believe it or not, Auburn at 6-3 was ranked number 25 and was higher ranked than Georgia, who only had won 5 games at this point. Georgia needed this game to get bowl eligible. And get this, Georgia's offense had turned the ball over in every game that season until this game. So basically what happened with the Georgia game in 09 was that Auburn came in actually favored to win in Athens, or at least, you know, not a deep underdog, as the ranked team of the two, and with a better record. We were 6-3, they were like 5-4, but they played a game, and the same thing happened with LSU. LSU had lost a couple of games, I think, and they got better playing against our defense. Georgia rang us up for 31. We were only able to get 24. We did have, this is cool, we did have a 100-yard kickoff return in this game. Damon Washington, who is a rocket on kickoff returns. Georgia had scored, I think, to go up like 31-17 late. And we were like, it's over. And then Washington has a 100-yard kickoff return, and it's 31-24. We get the ball back and are driving, and we get to like Georgia's 30-yard line, and they have a player, and I think it was their great safety, knocked away a sure touchdown Mario Fannin was about to catch that would have tied the game.
Todd
got him.
Complete and knocked out. Fannin had it and had it jarred loose by Rashad Jones with his second big defensive play of the night. Yeah, Rambo also there.
Yeah, Bakari Rambo. Willie Martinez told us yesterday he really likes Bakari Rambo.
And Rambo's shaking up down on the field after that hit that he made.
Boy, Mario Fannin, Mark, open down the seam.
And then that was on second down. And on third down, they sacked Todd for like an 8-yard loss. And on fourth and 18 on like the Georgia 38, Todd threw into the end zone incomplete and Georgia won. So it was quite a battle. And I don't know how I don't remember that game more, but you're right. I remember the Iron Bowl 2 weeks later in Auburn. Alabama was undefeated and just needed to beat us to make sure they went to Atlanta and played
Florida.
They would end up going undefeated for the whole season, including the national championship game. They came in and we gave them everything we had, right? I mean, they were not expecting what we came out and punched them in the face.
Trickery, little pitch coming around the end. Terrell Zachary, big room, 50, 40, watch out, 30, makes a cut back, 20. Zachary, 15, 10, 5, touchdown. Wes Byram, perfect on the season in PATs, 46 of 46, and the chip shot is up and good. Four plays, 80 yards, capped off by Zachary.
Well, we heard from Coach Gene Chizik and Gus Malzahn, the offensive coordinator. They wanted to start early, Craig. What a great call. Set up very, very well by the fake to Ben Tate. Huge opening drive for the Auburn Tigers.
Running right in your front living room. 67 yards. Terrell Zachary and Auburn up by 7. And that is a sight to see. And Zachary's run of 67 yards, Steve Erline, a sight to see.
Could not have come at a better time for Auburn. They wanted to make a statement early. They wanted to keep this crowd into it. You can tell it's pretty electric out here right now.
You know, Nick Saban told us in our talk on Tuesday, Steve, bottom line, I am worried about Auburn's NASCAR pace. And what we saw was a mixture of a lot of different looks. Kirby Smart, their defensive coordinator, told us it's like chasing ghosts out there. And they were chasing Zachary.
Yeah, very, very concerned about the different things that Auburn does, the pace, as you said, you cannot simulate the pace of this Auburn offense the way they get. It's almost the four quarters of the two-minute offense. We did not see the hectic pace on that first drive, but what we saw was very well thought out, very well executed plays designed for a purpose that were very successful. Onside kick.
All the tricks coming out in Iron Bowl 74. Auburn has possession at the 40-yard line. The first onside kick attempt this season by the Tigers.
What a great call, great timing. Gene Chizik throwing out all the stops early. You could see a great fake by Wes Byram, the kicker. He acted like he was walking back to the huddle and then turned. And as he turned, the whole Auburn team turns with him, and they get on top of that ball. Alabama had no chance. They weren't ready for it. This is exactly what Nick Saban was afraid of, getting the momentum, getting the energy behind this Auburn football team early.
Tommy Trott, you see number 5, the tight end, Tate, Chris Todd back under center. Little pitch out, Tate waiting, turns the corner, stacked up and dropped inside the 1-yard line. It'll be third down and goal for Auburn.
Well, you know, you can see right there the pride of this Alabama defense. That last touchdown that Auburn scored was the first touchdown in the first quarter of the season that Alabama has allowed right here. They do not want to allow a second. You're going to see the pursuit all day long. This team will not back down. They will run to the football. They will keep coming with pressure. They won't give you an inch. Gene Chizik said you've got to earn everything with this defense.
Third down and goal at the 1-yard line. Here's Stumble on the snap into the end zone. Touchdown! Eric Smith! Chris Todd with the flick of the wrist, and Auburn leads by 13. And that pass, his 20th of the season, just ties the Auburn single season record held by Jason Campbell and the great Pat Sullivan back in 1971. Byram stays perfect on the season, 48 of 48, and a stunner brewing in Auburn, Alabama. Todd flips it out, and Eric Smith grabs a touchdown. 12 plays, 58 yards, Tigers by 14.
It was the closest game anybody played him that year, and it was a revelation in terms of, we always talk about how if the other team's better, you have to take chances to win.
Yes.
And Chizik and his staff were 100% prepared with that game plan. They took chances from the opening kickoff.
I know we scored a touchdown and then did the onside kick on the ensuing kickoff and got the ball back and scored again, which is, I think, how we were up 14-0.
But we ran, you know, tricky plays on offense. We ran trick plays on special teams. Mm-hmm. Our defense kept us in the game and didn't give up as many big plays. It really was a masterful coaching performance by the entire staff. And I felt like Malzahn did the thing that he's done so many times over the years, where he pulled out a bunch of stuff that Alabama hadn't seen and wasn't prepared for. We were able to get some big gains on it. It really, really was a valiant effort by the 2009 team. And I think no Auburn fan, did we want to win? Are we upset that we lost? Sure. But no Auburn fan could watch that team walk out of the stadium and say they didn't give everything they had and try everything they could do to win that game.
Absolutely. And it took Alabama going down to the last drive of the game and having to just pull out every play that Saban had to get them on the little – I think they got a little dump pass maybe on the last play that they scored on to win 26-21, but they knew they'd been in a war, and it was darn close. So we end up 7-5, which is the same record the 2001 team had that co-won the West, so it's not horrible. And we ended up in a New Year's Day Bowl. We go to the Outback Bowl in Tampa and play Northwestern.
Happy New Year and welcome to the Outback Bowl. We're at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida for the first college football game of 2010. Featuring the Northwestern Wildcats from the Big Ten and the Auburn Tigers from the SEC. Dave Pasch, Chris Spielman, Bob Greasy, and Rob Stone with you. We're just moments away from kickoff. We're expecting to see two up-tempo, no-huddle offenses on display. Guys, how are they different?
Well, for Northwestern, it's very simple. They pass to set up the run. And that means Mike Kafka, their outstanding senior quarterback, has got to have a good day. He is their leading rusher and, of course, their leading passer.
When you look at Auburn, they want to run at super speed, high tempo. They're a downhill running football team. They're run first. They're a two-back football team. And what they try to do is they try to confuse you with a bunch of different looks and formations and motions and all kind of potions and everything. But they're very simple in what they do, the ISO game and the power game.
One of the worst offenses in college football last year, one of the best this year.
Auburn.
Yep.
They went from over 100 near the bottom of the teams offensively to near the top in the top 20 this year, mainly because of offensive coordinator Gus Malzahn.
And this game, oh my goodness, if you thought that, this team played some wacky games, and the West Virginia game and the Alabama game, the Georgia game and all that, but this Northwestern game, bowl game, was insane. This is a game where we scored first to go up 7-0, and then Northwestern went on this long, drawn-out hammer away. This was a game, by the way, that both teams just threw the ball all over the field. It's like bombs every play. Both teams every play just dropping back and hurling bombs and completing a lot of them. But Northwestern drove down. It's like the Auburn-Florida game back in the 90s. Drove down, got down to our red zone, threw the ball to a receiver in the end zone.
Empty backfield. Kafka, the lone man back there, waits for the snap from Burkett on third down and goal from the 6. Takes it. Here comes pressure. Into the end zone. Walt McFadden tips and intercepts it. Down the far sideline. 15, 20, 25, 30, 40, 50, 40. Nobody's going to catch him. Walt McFadden. Coast to coast. Touchdown, Auburn. 102 yards. Wow. What a play right there, a corner out, and it's going to garner a celebration penalty, but Kafka was getting pressure right in his face. Walt McFadden did a great job of tipping the ball away first and then catching it, and he did the rest, 102 yards right down the Auburn sideline, going to get a penalty, and a talking from Gene Chizik, obviously, but Walt McFadden, the senior, celebrating on that for Auburn's second pick of the day and second touchdown of the day.
And an Auburn defensive back steps in front and took it 100 yards the other way, and we're up 14-0. Now, you'd think that would be a dagger in the heart of teams and that Northwestern would just say, well, forget it, you know. But they didn't. They came back, and the game turns into a crazy track meet, and it ends up 35-35, and we go into overtime. And before we go into overtime, any other highlights you want to mention from that game?
Here's what I want to mention. We had been visiting relatives in Atlanta over the holidays, and we're driving home back to Virginia listening to this game on the radio, and I was recording it. And we listened to this game on the car radio, and it was – I just remember it going on and on and on. And there were a million kind of like, it could end here, but no. It could end here, but no. It just happened again and again and again. And I just remember it being a very draining experience.
It was, and yet when it's over, and I'm going to talk about how it ends, but when it was over, I was so excited. I had such energy and excitement from that game and from how we had played against Alabama. It's rare when losing to Alabama is a positive, but that game had pumped us up. And so I had such positive feelings, not necessarily about, you know, going 8-5, that was fine. But I had such great feelings about the future because I thought if this staff can come in and win the games it won with no defense and with pieces here and there on offense cobbled together in their first season, then just think what this staff can do when we have some players,
yes.
some more players, some depth, you know.
And this will be Chris Todd's final game. The starter next year could very well be Cameron Newton, who yesterday signed a national letter of intent to attend Auburn after leading Blinn College to a junior college national title. He played as a true freshman behind Tim Tebow as the backup quarterback of Florida in 07.
And the difference Gus Malzahn will have in his offense, as you see 16 rushing touchdowns, Cam Newton will bring his legs to this offense, which will make it more dangerous.
That's a big signing, too, and that's got a lot to do with that man right there, Gus Malzahn, being the offensive guru that he is.
I think Dan Mullen was Newton's offensive coordinator, and he turned down Mullen at Mississippi State to play for Malzahn at Auburn. Let's check in with Rob for more.
Hey, guys, during our conference call a couple days back with Coach Gene Chizik, he was talking about how important it is to find a quarterback for next year, and he was saying, yeah, you know, right, maybe it's somebody we have here, maybe it's somebody we're going to get. He was kind of hinting that they had their eye on somebody. I talked to Coach pregame on the field. I mumbled, you know, Cameron Newton. Oh, boy, did his eyes light up, mouth kind of drop. He said, let me tell you, that is a signing. That is a big boy. And he was borderline drooling, guys, at the prospects of having him in January and schooling him under Malzahn.
But, yeah, the game could have ended a couple of times in regulation. Ends up 35-35. I believe on the last play of regulation, Northwestern's kicker missed a field goal that would have won it for them. So then we go into overtime, and we end up kicking a field goal, 38-35. We celebrated winning the game, I think, at least two or three times, and then had to go back, you know, in other words, get back off the field.
Mm-hmm.
There was at least three times that our players were all out on the field celebrating, had to go back.
This is what I was talking about.
Yeah, and then, well, yeah, because it happened once at the end of the game in regulation, and then, like, multiple times in overtime, and I feel like their kicker missed every attempt starting at the end of regulation. They were, like, on our 5-yard line at the end.
So after Auburn makes the field goal to go up 38-35, Northwestern comes out, and the quarterback is sacked and fumbles the ball, and it looks like Auburn recovers, but the referees talk about it forever and then give it back to Northwestern. So that's one time Auburn would have won. Then Auburn holds Northwestern and makes them try a field goal to tie it to go to a second overtime, and they miss. And that's the second time Auburn won, except now the referees call roughing the kicker on Auburn, and so they get a third shot. But when they roughed the kicker, the Northwestern kicker was hurt, and they had to put in like a freshman, somebody that had never played apparently. And so when Auburn holds them a third time and forces them to try to kick a field goal down on the Auburn about 5-yard line, and this is all the same possession, it's still only 38-35. Northwestern probably wisely figures they're not going to put the game on the foot of this rookie kicker, so instead they quickly try a fake field goal run around the right end, and the entire Auburn defense is not faked out by it.
And it's a fake! And to the 2-9 ball comes out, Auburn wins! How about that decision to go for the fake, guys, on a short field goal? Agree or disagree?
Well, I don't know what you have in Flaherty. I really don't. So it's hard for me to say. I don't know. But I know this.
Hey, they lived this way the whole season. They gambled the whole time.
They probably liked that play as much as they liked that two-point play down here that tied it up.
And it would have been about a 22-yard field goal. The direct snap to Dan Persa. No, it wasn't Persa. It was Markshausen, and Auburn was not fooled.
Great job by Auburn of running and hustling. Nico Thorpe with a game-saving tackle. Carter stretching it out, number 45. Great job of Carter and Nico Thorpe defeating their blocks and saving the day for the Tiger defense and the Tiger team.
No flags.
It's a third.
No review.
Yeah, it's a third time. They're running out on the field for the third time.
Guys are saying we can finally throw our helmets as high into the air as we want because we don't have to put them back up.
And they converge on the guy, knock him out of bounds at the goal line, and finally that ends the game. And so we end up holding on and winning 38-35. And then came the 2010 season. All right, so that was the 2009 season. I hope you guys enjoyed it. There's lots more where that came from. Just go to www.auwishbone.com and become a patron, and you can listen to the entire Gene Chizik era, including a great amount covering the 2010 season in detail, lots of audio clips and more interviews and so forth. We have to thank our patrons who got us this far, right, who are on board now and keep our programs on the air. That includes Matthew Flowers, Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson, along with Phil Amthor, Ben Spooner, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, William Glenn Matthews, Gary Grant, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Tom Anderson, Susan Trawick, Logan Chilton, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. Then we have William Morgan, Emmanuel Seaman, W.D.E. Ritchie, Winston Boddy, Clinton Stewart, Christopher Stewart, Mickey B., Phil Davis, Joshua Corbett, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, A.U. Falling Up, Alchemist Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, Will Summerford, David Hegler, Johnny Caldwell, Theodore Gary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kanjian, Catherine England, George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, and Rich Reimer. And then we have Darris Benton, Rob Morgan, Blake Heron, Hugh Anderson, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Russell Milling, Kevin Kanoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Randall Walker, Shane Bailey, Chris Thrash, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, and C.T. Wayne. And finally, we have Jeremy Minton, Warnam Wade, Spikey, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Mick Vigicana, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Wyatt, Trevor Johnson, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Matthew Wagstaff, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, plus Chris Brent Rumble, and our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. You guys get to listen to the whole thing right now if you want to, if you haven't already. The rest of you go to www.auwishbone.com, and for as little as $1 a month, you can join the group, join the family, the AU Wishbone family, and get in on the fun. We'll see you next week with the 2006 Florida game. My time is up. I thank you for yours, War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.